Good morning, folks. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. I'm Georgia.
And I'm Hannah.
And you're listening to Film Picnic. We'd like to begin, as always, by acknowledging that our show is recorded on the ancestral territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. This land is referred to as unceded territory because it was not given up freely and continues to be home for the indigenous communities from which it is stolen.
Yes, it is with immense privilege that we talk into these microphones and share our stories, as stories have been shared for generations before us on this land. We hope that Film Picnic can be a space for shared accountability, knowledge sharing, and reconciliation. This always was and always will be Indigenous land.
Beautiful. Good morning. We have with us a very special guest today.
Yay!
Well, first of all, let's say we are not in Studio A at CITR. We are not live this morning.
We are pre-recorded.
And in a wonderful little setup that we have in our studio. Guys, please head to our Instagram and check out how cute the setup is, because it's really gorgeous and really cute. Our guest today with us is a Métis Canadian actor most well known for his role as Moose on the CW show Riverdale. You guys might have also seen him in Daybreak, the Netflix series, or Breach. Please welcome Cody Kearsley.
Yay!
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We are so excited to have you. Cody also just so happens to be my acting teacher as of recently.
And
so thank you.
And now our guest.
Amazing. Yes.
Oh my gosh. Well, just thank you for being here. How are you doing this morning? How are you feeling?
I'm good. I'm a little nervous. I'm usually nervous in interviews, so.
That's okay. Well, it'll be. We'll start off with some easy questions. None of them are hard.
None of them are hard. Yeah.
I think to start off, we just wanted to talk about your experience as an actor, specifically going from. I watched an interview of yours yesterday.
We did our research.
which one?
I
wouldn't remember it.
Courageous Nerd, that one. Yes. And you said that you have been performing since you were three.
I have, yeah.
You've been performing since you were three, and then you went to acting school at 18.
Yeah.
How has that experience been transitioning from acting school, where I'm assuming you did mostly theater?
Yeah, it was very theater-based, very classical theater-heavy.
Yeah.
A lot of Shakespeare, a lot of Molière, Chekhov, all that.
Yeah. How has that experience transitioning into film and TV?
I mean, when I got my first job was, actually Riverdale was my second film job.
Wow.
I had like one line on Power Rangers and it was cut out.
Yeah.
But I remember
that was same with my first film job, The Flash. I had two lines of that. I said, wow, that's what they left in.
They left in?
That, okay. Yeah.
I think mine, I ran in and I said, the cops are coming, but I'm completely in shadow. You can't even see it's me.
But your name's on those credits.
My name's on the credits, like, pretty high up, too.
Yeah.
Weirdly. It's, like, right under Bryan Cranston. It was, like, close to Bryan Cranston.
There you go.
I was, like, not even
we like
in the film,
this guy.
But,
yeah.
No, that's
amazing.
But, so I'll call Riverdale kind of my first experience on set. And I remember after the pilot, they told all the Canadians, actually, that we needed to go take class.
Oh.
I think that's a kind of American production thing. I've heard it happen a few times.
They were like, wow.
With threat of replacing us. At least that's what I was told.
Okay, small diss.
Wait,
small
that's
diss?
So interesting.
I probably shouldn't be
saying
this.
No, that's really interesting. Like, class, I mean, but you went to acting school. Like, class for on screen specifically? Or just, like, you need some more training?
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I think this is still kind of a perception of Canadian actors that were less trained or less experienced.
Yeah, okay.
So anyways, and honestly, it was great because I went to Andrew McElroy, mm-hmm. and he's, you know, phenomenal teacher, one of the best teachers I've ever had. And it was specifically for me, and I think a few of us, was to scale down for film.
Yeah.
You're too theatrical. At least I was too theatrical.
I talked to you about that. That's the feedback that I get. It's like too polished or... Yeah, too theatrical, I guess.
Yeah. Mm. So really, I just was learning to play for the medium.
Mm-hmm.
I think all the training I got in theater school, I still use.
Like, yeah.
All the training is transferable to whatever medium you're on.
Yeah.
But it was really just scaling it down and learning to speak for the lens.
Yeah. Lovely.
Yeah.
Which is certainly, I feel like, an interesting kind of dynamic when you consider like shows that are filmed live, or, you know, like live sitcoms or things that are kind of riding the line between theater and live film. Have you ever gotten the chance to do something like that, or would you be interested in doing something?
Yeah, we'd love to do a live audience sitcom. That'd be fun. Yeah. I haven't been able to yet, but I would.
I was just watching SNL last night, and I'm a big fan of SNL.
Chapel,
yes. So many things. You have so many amazing projects. I feel like we've done a little research into a couple of them.
I'm surprised that Riverdale was your first, like, big, or your second project, but you're kind of your first job.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Slipped through the cracks.
That's awesome.
Somehow. I don't know.
Yeah. I wanted to ask really quickly about Daybreak. This Netflix series that you were on. I was reading an interview that you did that was a journal, like an article, and you were talking about really enjoying when you are able to add creative input for a character and kind of help bring them to life on screen. I'm wondering, what's one thing that you, when you're able to add creative input, what's one thing that you really like to advocate for or is important to you when you're kind of materializing a character?
That's a good question. I think it depends on the project and it depends on the character. It's more of just the allowance of an opinion where I can actually feel like I can talk to the writers or the directors and say, hey, I have a question about this, or I've discovered this. How do you feel about this? And it becomes more of a collaboration.
Yeah.
Right. Where I find, because film is such a hierarchy, when you're not the series regular or a lead or supporting, you don't really have a say. You kind of show up, you say your lines. I mean, once in a while, depends on the director they have, but a lot of times you kind of just, you go in, you say your lines, and you're told where to stand, you're told how to say it, and then and you leave.
Yes.
You know on being a professional.
And that is something that I've missed that about doing theater. Like, I haven't done theater since I graduated high school. And I love
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Okay, that was grade 11, but I did do one musical.
I feel like I hear about it on regular basis.
Oh, it was formative. But yeah, I loved the rehearsal space. I love being able to discover the characters and also play around with it with, you know, your castmates. And I love film. It's so much fun. But it really is like, okay, you're there on the day. Say your lines, unless obviously you have a larger role and you have time to spend with the director.
Exactly. So the collaboration really comes in when you're higher up in film, I find. So I'm saying, like, from a theater background, I miss that collaboration a lot. And you really only get that in theater or indie films.
Yeah.
So Daybreak was the first time that I experienced that on a big budget set where I actually had a say in it. And I felt like I was a part of the project.
Yeah.
And it was incredible.
Was that shot in Vancouver?
New Mexico, Albuquerque.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
And I had like a month to prepare, which is also unheard of. Yeah. So I did all my nerdy, you know, pretentious actor process for a month, and I really got into character and I loved it. So I showed up on set really, really ready to tackle it.
Wow.
Which was great.
That's awesome. Your character Turbo in Daybreak, what was something that you were advocating for with that character specifically? Or like, what's a piece of creative input that you were able to kind of get across on screen?
So I created this whole playbook for myself. I didn't know anything about football, first of all. So I had to like research, because he was the quarterback. So I had to research football. So
you played a few footballers.
I have, yeah.
We were doing research and we were like, they love putting interesting him in varsity jackets.
Yeah.
About your frame, they're like, let's put a varsity jacket on this movie.
Yeah. Sexually fluid quarterbacks. That's my niche.
Yes.
That's my,
That's amazing.
So I created this whole football playbook in which I studied, apologies to the listeners, I have Tourette's, so my sniffling is a tick. So I created this whole football playbook where I learned all about, plays and how quarterbacks operate. And through the playbook, I converted it to a zombie apocalypse survival guide. So I learned how to, you know, filtrate water from the nuclear waste. I learned in LA where all the food storages was, where all the gas storage was. So I would be able to, one, it started off as how do I conduct my troops on the field? And then it became how do I conduct my troops in the zombie apocalypse and how do we survive?
Wow.
So I had this playbook where I would come to set and I would kind of pull things from. And I had a bunch of images and, you know, and I had a playlist that I would kind of just all incorporate on the day. But I would kind of open the playbook and I'd be like, oh, this is what we need to accomplish today. So I'd kind of incorporate those things in the set.
That's awesome. That's
really cool.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that awareness of the of the Los Angeles area.
Like, yeah, because we were set in Glendale.
Okay.
So I had a whole map, and I would like cross off. I'd be like, I had a whole map, and this one would be crossed off. Zombies have taken over this one.
Wow.
This one, it's all the food's been gone. This one. This one, another tribe's over there.
What a fun process.
Yeah, it was really fun. And then there's certain like hand signals and grunts that we would have in order to like, you know, tell the troops where to go.
Yeah.
All those things. There's one specific memory I have. It's also the collaboration of just being able to speak to costume, props,
yeah,
and everybody, and kind of all work together to create this character. There was one moment where I'm sitting there watching the TV, and I'm watching my arch nemesis. I'm mm-hmm. trying to find out, I don't know where he is, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there, and it's just like, it felt so still. So I'm like, I go to the props master. I'm like, is there something I could just be playing with? So he like gave me, I don't know what it was, a football or something, spinning that. It didn't really work. Gave me something else. And then he's like, I got an idea. He goes and finds a grenade.
Oh, so my gosh.
I'm holding a grenade by the pin, and I'm just kind of spinning it and catching it.
Wow.
And they kept that in the film.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yes, but it's just that level of contribution that I feel like I can offer, and that I can also, you know, take from other people who mm-hmm. are offering.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I really enjoyed about that.
I think it's important as well, like, as an actor, when you feel good in the costume that you're wearing, or if you feel,
yeah,
like, everything that you're doing, obviously, needs to make sense to you. And so when you're able to ask questions and be like, hey, this feels weird. Can I do it this way? Or
yeah,
can I have something to play with? Yeah.
I feel like the grenade is so interesting too, because I feel like then that's really telling you something about the character, that they're a type of person that's comfortable enough to be casually holding a grenade, which
yeah,
is intrinsically a very different message than spinning a football.
Exactly.
Even though it's, you know, yeah, surface level, just like we're playing with something with our hands.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Are all of your, would you say you prep to the same extent for most of the projects that you do? Like, are you always very thorough in your kind of prep work, or does it vary between the roles that you're doing?
It varies between the roles. I try to do as much as possible, but sometimes it's like, you know, you're on set in 2 days.
Yeah.
I've had a couple projects where my most recent, I did an indie film a few months back, and the lead had booked something or wasn't able to do it, and they kind of called me last minute. I've had a couple projects like that where they call me last minute.
Whoa.
And I jump in. So I try to do as much prep as possible. In those situations, I kind of dedicate 24/7 to it.
Yeah.
I put everything else on hold and I just go. But I spend a lot of time with imagination work. So I'll just like immediately start thinking and spinning on a character's problems and just, you know, walking through the forest and just kind of thinking about building the world in my mind.
Yeah.
So I do a lot of that type of prep. And then the other things like the playbook or whatever the specifics are, depending on the project.
Mm.
Yeah. If we can shift to talk about Breach a little bit.
I watched that last night.
Yeah.
What?
There's some cringing going on.
Oh, I'm the camera.
Where is the
This is why I get in trouble in interviews. No, there's no cringing. There's no cringing.
Oh, no cringing.
We can talk about Breach.
Let's talk about Breach.
Well, my good friend, Edward Drake, who's wonderful. I wanted to work with him for a while. He was the writer of that one. There was an indie film we wanted to do before that, and it didn't work out. Because I booked Daybreak, so I wasn't able to do it.
Yeah.
But anyways, after that, he's like, hey, I got this. We're doing this film with Bruce Willis. You want to do it? And I was like, yeah, sure.
No big deal at all. That's crazy.
Yeah. And I said yes to it. And the script that he wrote was much different than the script when we arrived.
Really?
Once the producers, I think, and everyone got their hands on it.
Mm.
And when we arrived, so Bruce was obviously had aphasia, and he was kind of, you know, spiraling at that time. None of us really knew. We just saw a lot of, I don't know, confusing behavior from him and his team. And we were just like, what is going on? The script was completely different. It was a little bit chaotic, to be honest.
Okay.
We shot it in like 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Shooting, like, because we only had him for 3 days. So we would shoot like all of his coverage.
Which is, there was a lot to shoot in 3 days.
Yeah, well, we'd shoot all of his coverage over 3 days. So we'd shoot like 30 pages.
Right.
With just his close-ups. Then we'd go back and shoot with his body double and shoot everything else.
Wow, okay.
So it was one of those things where it felt a little... They were making a lot of these films a year. So it felt a little bit... It was just kind of like... I don't think they were really concerned about the quality of it at all.
Yeah.
And even the people that really did care, they were kind of like, just... No one's going to see it.
Just
have
do
fun.
It. Right, right, yeah. Right.
You know?
Yes.
I thought it was so interesting. I read a different interview that the sets were in a high school gym.
Yeah.
And that is astounding to me. Like the level of effort and
yeah,
just creative
Yeah, they killed the sets. They really, really did. And there's some incredible artists on that project. Like, I met some really cool people. I really had a good time. I learned a lot. But because, and also the place where I was, like, I wasn't at a really great place in my life at that time. And I also had an incredible ego at that time as well. I just gotten off Daybreak, and there's just some personal stuff going on where I was just not my best version as well. So that in combination with just the chaos nature of it.
Yeah.
It was all, I didn't really do the best of my ability at all. I didn't really prep for that one at all. I kind of just was like, okay,
well, I'm here.
Let's go with it. Yeah, you know what I mean? And kind of everyone had that attitude. And it was just, it was a fun experience. It was just looking back on, I wish I had handled it differently and probably did a little bit better work.
I guess we learn from every project that we're on, right?
I guess we learn.
Yes. But for what it's worth, I thought you were great. So.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I can't watch it back.
No,
every line I say, I'm just like, oh,
really?
My God.
I mean, I can't even watch my, I can barely watch my auditions back, so.
Anyway. Yeah, I hear that.
Yeah, I'll just say, like, what was the process of just working with someone as a peer that maybe you'd been starstruck by in the past? Like, or did you kind of have that feeling towards Bruce Willis, or maybe not?
Yeah, it was funny because, and he was really nice to me. Like, I want to put that out there. He was really lovely. It was just clear he was struggling. We just didn't know what he was struggling from at the time.
Yeah.
Right.
But when he first came to set, it was a scene where both of us were in bunk beds. I don't even remember the film, but we were in bunk beds.
I remember.
Were we in bunk beds at one point?
We were in bunk beds.
Yeah. So we're sitting in this little room, and they're like, okay, Bruce is coming to set. And everyone around the wall is like,
oh.
The waiting, like, every single person on set was just like, okay, we're waiting.
Bated breath.
Yeah, yeah. And we were waiting for about a minute or something, and then his assistant came in and was like, oh, he's not ready yet. And I was like, oh,
okay.
And we start talking about the scene. They're like, hey, Bruce is coming. We all wait. And then he walks in, and he was so chill. He was like, hey, guys, what's going on? I shook everyone's hand. He's like, you're sitting there. Cool. What's up, bro? And we did a thing, and it was really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I feel like that's always not always the way, but I feel like a lot of the time, you know, people have, the first set that I was on, Justin Long and Joel McHale were there, and that was really cool, and I was nervous to meet them, but they were very down to earth and very friendly and willing to have a conversation. And yeah, I don't know what I was expecting, but yeah.
I mean, it is a hit or miss. You never know. You hear stories, and sometimes the stories are true.
Yeah, like, don't look me in the eyes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know, I feel like it's nice if that celebrity mythology can kind of be dissolved to some extent.
I think it has with social media to some extent.
Yeah, you spend more time with them in their non, like, I don't know, perfect image way.
Yeah.
Not just seeing them huge on a movie theater screen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
But I had one of my favorite people I've met with that was a celebrity was Joe Manganiello. Do you know him?
I don't know him.
He was married to Sofia Vergara. He was in True Blood, Magic
Mike. Oh, yes.
He was so dope. Like, he's huge. He's like 6'5" or 6'6".
Whoa.
Massive dude. And very much like all-American jock type.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize he went to musical theater school. And like when I met him, I was like, do you want to go for lunch and like chat? Because he played my dad. So I was like, do you want to chat about character stuff? He's like, yeah. So we went out for lunch and we just like talked about backstory and talked about our relationship. And he was like, he was in.
Yeah.
So that experience was really incredible. It was like, oh, you can be an A-list celebrity and still care about the process.
100%,
Which I hadn't really seen before.
Yeah.
So it was really cool.
I think that's also a note for our listeners of just like, hey, let's have a conversation about this. We always talk about connecting and having building those relationships and being unafraid to even ask for that. Of course, you know, people have their own schedules and all of that, but.
Yeah, every project I do, I reach out to the people that I'm in relation with in the project and ask if we can chat about character stuff.
Yeah.
That's I prefer that. I prefer making a connection ahead of time. I prefer like getting on the same page.
Yeah.
Not dictating how they're going to do things, but just asking questions and talking
about
things.
Where are you coming from? Like, what are your thoughts on this character? Yeah. Your character.
I love that discussion. Yeah. Like I was the one I just did recently is this film coming out called A Safe Distance.
Mm-hmm.
And the three of us, there's three of us, as the main cast, and we sat around for quite a while, like multiple days. Like two of us would pair off, and two of us would pair off, and we'd all three meet up, and we just chat about our relationships and what's going on, and it really informed everything when we got to sex. We already had the relationships built.
Yeah,
we had a full understanding.
It makes a difference. It makes a huge difference. I was just doing chemistry reads for my thesis film on Friday, and I opened it up to people that I didn't know and people that I did know. But obviously, the actors that had pre-established relationships, the chemistry was so much more visible. And, and I as a director, really appreciated that. Yeah, it makes a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have like a favorite experience or like a favorite person that you've worked with or someone that just like really stands out in your mind? Or I guess a scene partner. Yeah.
Oh, a lot.
One person yeah, one that person. You've ever
Who's
worked
the
with.
Best actor the I've best. Ever worked with. Oh God.
Well, I don't want... yeah, just in just in terms of like a positive experience, like we're saying, you know, like being able to establish that connection.
Honestly, I think the last project I did, Tandia and Bethany Brown and Tandia. Blanking on her last name. And Tandia. She has her one name. Sorry, Tandia, if you hear this. I can't remember your last name right now. But both of them, I think that was probably one of the best experiences because we were all just, we just went in 100%. And there was like there was a lot of intimacy scenes in that as well. Yeah. And I think, to the level of which none of us have gone that far with intimate scenes before. Yeah. So we had to have a certain level of safety and trust.
Yeah.
And we had an incredible intimacy coordinator named Tolmi. She was amazing.
She's
but
so important.
Yeah, so important. Oh
so
my God.
Important.
It's wild. Like I'd never seen an intimacy coordinator until like a few years ago. And it is incredible.
Wow. Our first proper film production class that we have in our cohort, the entire first half of the class was taken up by an intimacy coordinator coming in and explaining what their role is and why they're important and consent on set, not just with like the actors, but with the crew.
Yeah.
And so me coming out of film school, consent. Oh my gosh. I don't feel safe doing that. Should be something that people should be able to say.
Yeah.
But me coming, you know, as a young person in acting school, getting on set and having my first intimacy scene and being like, where is the intimacy coordinator here?
Yeah.
Interesting. And I cannot believe that that is something that's only, it's still not mandatory.
No.
It's just highly recommended.
Yeah. It is interesting to consider that it's just best practice or something that's, you know, not mandatory.
But also when you say with the crew, like it a lot of times... Because we're all working together, we all feel really, you know, we all have a shorthand, we're all joking around. Sometimes a crew will, like, they'll make comments, sometimes harmless comments, but sometimes when you're in the intimate situations, you're like, I actually want there to be a little bit of a barrier here.
Yeah.
So it's for the intimacy coordinator, not just for us, but it's also, like, setting boundaries with everyone. Hey, you guys can't be here, you can't say certain things here, you know what I mean?
Let's not make jokes about, you know? Yeah.
So, anyways, we had an incredible intimacy coordinator, and that experience with Bethany and Tandia, just the level of process and the level of which we all dove in, the level of trust and kind of like community we built amongst ourselves was really great, and it really allowed for us to all, hopefully showcase some of our best work.
Yeah. Did you say that film is coming out soon or it's come out recently?
No, it's coming out next year. I don't know. Okay. I don't know exactly when. It'll be just film festivals, hopefully, but yeah.
Okay. Exciting.
Stay tuned. We'll give an update.
Yeah.
Knock knock. Guess who? MRG Live coming right back at you. This time with a whole new list of upcoming live shows by your favorite artists. Hear this. Marika Hackman, Faye Webster, Empress of, Peter Cat Recording Co., and The Rare Occasions are a few of the artists MRG Live is bringing to you. Follow at MRG Live Official on Instagram to stay tuned with all the artists performing near you. ZZ Theatre presents the Rainbow Youth Project, produced by Yanting Chu and curated by Brittany O'Rourke, Alan Pronger, and Bria Chance. This annual community storytelling project centers the 2S LGBTQ+ voices who often don't get a say in their lives, bodies, and identities. Bringing two-spirit, queer, and trans youth from across Metro Vancouver to share their stories. The Rainbow Storytelling Project is a low-barrier, one-on-one project in which people share true stories from their lives. It is designed to challenge stereotypes and preconceived notions of otherness, promote dialogue, reduce prejudices, and encourage understanding by connecting people who, under normal circumstances, might never meet. The Rainbow Youth Project will be running on dates November 16th, 17th, the 23rd, and 24th from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Vancouver Public Library Central Branch on the third floor. This is a free event with no sign-up required. All that is necessary is your attendance and your empathy.
Picture this. You're walking into your local record store and start skimming the many records until you find an album that you recognize. You pick out the album, check the track list, and maybe only recognize a couple songs. Now you have to listen to the whole album, right? Well, why not do it together? On Discali, every show runs you through an entire album and breaks down key parts and songs that make up an album's aesthetic, art, and story. I'm your host, Oliver, and join me every Friday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. in talking about all things music. Want to discover more albums, artists, record pressings, and concerts? I got you. That's every Friday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., so tune in to Discali to discover different discographies and add to the musical discourse.
Are you someone in recovery? Someone struggling with addiction or disordered eating? Or are you simply curious to explore your relationship to alcohol, drugs, and other types of addictive behaviors? The UBC Student Recovery Community is a safe space to connect with others. The SRC provides many types of support, such as drop-in hours, recovery meetings, one-on-one support, and even has a dedicated recovery lounge. The SRC supports all pathways of recovery, from harm reduction to abstinence and everything in between. You can learn more at recovery_UBC on Instagram. And you can also contact the community at src.recovery@ubc.ca. Remember, you're not alone.
Transitioning a little bit to talking about identity. Being an actor is so cool. You're bringing different, identities
you're bringing
to
yourself
on screen.
To each mm-hmm. character.
I think it's really interesting, even as an audience member, to watch a piece of media where you know that there's something in the identity of the character that aligns with the actor. In the film you did, River Road, you get to play a Vancouverite. And you're doing
and a junkie.
Yeah. but then, you've got, obviously you're Canadian. Yeah. And you get to play Canadian, which is really exciting.
And I'm sober. That's what I meant by that.
And you're sober, yeah.
Right. So a difference there. Yeah. And then...
But it was very aligned with what I was going through at the time, which was really cool. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Would you like to elaborate any more on that? Or?
Well, I can, but I cut you off. You can finish your sentence first, and then I will.
I'm steering us in a slightly different direction. But,
okay, that's fine.
I wanted to hear a little bit about Shadow of the Rougarou, if that's okay.
And, yeah.
Just because in previous interviews, you've discussed a little bit about the tension between, or just your own personal navigation of Indigenous identity.
Can I lay down a little
please,
bit?
Please, get okay, comfortable.
Cool. you've touched on personally navigating Indigenous identity,
yeah.
What it means to you, being really intentional in the space that you occupy. And
y'all have done your research, huh?
We do our research.
It's
thank you.
Yeah.
I was like, I know Cody, but let me...
just being intentional in how you claim indigeneity. I'm curious if stepping into a project like Shadow of the Rougarou, and I'm curious if stepping into Indigenous roles on screen has been a part of personally exploring Indigenous identity for you.
Yeah, definitely. And I wasn't going to do Shadow of the Rougarou at first, because even though I am Métis, I am viewed as a white man. Mm. So the lived experience is important, and I just haven't had the lived experience or been treated as an Indigenous person. Mm. So I was always, I don't feel comfortable taking up that space, even though I am involved with the Métis community, culturally connected. it was just something, and also I have a, you know, tumultuous relationship with my dad's side of the family growing up. So it was just something where I was like, I don't know how to navigate this.
Yeah. Right.
But because the story specifically was, you know, his father was white, his mother was Métis, and I mean, I'm the opposite. My mom is white and my dad is Métis. Mm-hmm. Because the circumstances paralleled my own, mm-hmm. I felt comfortable with it. And also I played Louis Riel in a short film, and Louis Riel was like, you know, he was like an eighth indigenous or something. Yeah. So I feel comfortable taking up those spaces. Mm-hmm. But if I've gotten auditions before for like, I don't know, a Mohawk character, a Cree character, I just turn those down. I'm like, I can't play those. I can play Métis specifically, yeah. but I can't deviate from that.
Yeah.
You know.
That's very fair. So is that kind of what pushed you to accept that project, was like the specific circumstance of the character's experience kind of mirroring your own?
That, and also my grandfather just passed away mm-hmm. right before that. And it was kind of the first time where, I think right before he died, he was started talking about residential school. Right. And like a picture surfaced of him in said residential school. So a lot of my family started really discussing it and talking about it and started unpacking and healing from things.
Yeah.
So it really paralleled or it coincided with my family's journey of healing trauma.
Yeah.
So it just came at a right time where I was like, you're
ready for it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, I don't think I was ready for it. But it was... It was needed. Yeah. I remember reading it. I was like, oh, I need to do this.
Yeah.
Right. At first I was hesitant. I wasn't going to do it. And then after I started thinking about these things I'm expressing now, I was like, I need to do this.
Yeah. Was there a certain level of research involved with that project, or like, were you, you know, was there a little, because, you know, you have a background that aligned with it. Was there something that you were able to kind of lend?
It was a lot of self-discovery, psychological processing, that type of work that was needed of like of self-identity and okay, where do I fit in, what is my experience, because again, Bruno's experience was his mom, who was Métis, died when he was young, and he was raised purely by his white father, who kind of beat the culture out of him,
yeah,
and beat the language out of him, right? And now he's the tour guide for all these white hunters from the States to like show them around and help them kill animals here, right? And so feeling like an other, both in that group but also as an other in the indigenous communities, because it was all beaten out of him, right? So it was a lot of that kind of work of just analyzing, okay, where do I fit in, how do I feel about this, how do I show up, how do I stand tall in this, you know. There was a lot of researches of the time period, you know.
Historical.
You know, which was great. And I mean, the costumes, props, set, everything was so, probably the best sets I've ever been on. Like, wow. It was beautiful.
It looked really cool.
Yeah. Actually, that was one of my best experiences. I'll take that one's in top experiences as well, to be honest. That, because it was the first time I think a lot of us had seen like an entirely or predominantly indigenous crew as well.
Oh, they prioritized that as well.
Yeah. So okay, we had a ceremony at the beginning of our shoot. I can't remember if it was every day or the first day, but there'd be smudging and there'd be a ceremony ahead of time. And, you know, it was just such a safe space and everyone was just felt so at home. And
Yeah.
It was really cool.
That's awesome.
And we had incredible elders on set too, because we spoke in three different languages. We had Michif, Chinook jargon, which is a dead trader language, which is a combination of like a bunch of different languages melted into one.
Yeah.
And then Plains Cree. So we had elders come to set to teach us how to speak the languages.
That's so special.
And also share the stories, yeah.
Even just having an opportunity to learn those languages is, I mean, in a set environment is special, but I think just in general is such a special opportunity as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jumping back really quick to River Road, you mentioned how your sobriety kind of aligned with, or like your experience aligned with the character that you were playing, and I want to give you the opportunity to elaborate there if you want to, if you feel comfortable.
Oh yeah, I talk about sobriety quite a bit. I was sober at that time. It was my first time getting sober, but I didn't have any sort of program. I was just kind of white knuckling, and after a couple near-death experiences and just bad things happening, I was like, I gotta get sober. So I was sober for 2 years, and that was the time where I did that film.
Okay.
So I don't think my sobriety was very strong at the time.
Yeah.
So I was kind of going down the rabbit hole of addiction. I wasn't obviously using at the time, but through that character's exploration, I was kind of yeah, I guess going down the rabbit hole of addiction.
Yeah.
Without fully understanding sobriety yet.
Yeah.
Which is probably the perfect time for it, actually. Yeah. But then I relapsed and I wasn't sober for a while. And now I've been sober almost 5 years and I have a very strong program and strong Congrats. Community.
Yeah,
thank you.
That's amazing.
And you know, it's much different perspective now in my sobriety.
Yeah.
At the time it was, yeah, very much white knuckling it, but it was a very fun project. We had like 3 crew members. That was it. It was like 3 of them.
Guys, indie film.
Sorry, what?
It was the writer.
Sorry, what?
Yeah. Rob, he was the writer, director, cinematographer, composer. He did everything.
Oh my goodness.
He was basically just like, he was directing it and he was like holding the camera. And then we had Ethan, our producer, who would hold like a bounce or a light once in a while. And then we had one sound boom operator.
What was the budget for that project? Do you know?
I have no idea. Probably less than 50 grand.
Small. Small. Yeah. Wow. That's really impressive. And so that experience, was that triggering for you in any way?
Not at all. No? Even now, anytime I play with addiction, it's always very, do I want to say cathartic? It's like, I don't know. It doesn't feel dangerous territory. It's quite fun, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
To kind of release in a
release
way.
Release that, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
What drew you to that project specifically? I'm curious.
So that was one of those situations where the lead dropped out, and they asked me last minute.
And you were like, Cody, to save the day.
Yeah. Well, at the time, I was on Riverdale, and this is like, you know, 2 seasons in. I didn't really feel like I was part of it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I really felt like just, I was a background actor. I'd show up and, you know, barely had lines. I kind of stood there, wasn't really connecting with anyone on set, kind of felt like an outsider very much, and didn't really feel like I was part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, with my experience with that, I was like, I don't really want to do TV if this is what it's like. That's why I opened my theater company, because I was like, I'm just going to get back to theater.
Yeah.
So anyways, River Road came about a time right when I was in that place where I'm like, don't feel welcome here. I don't really feel like a part of this. I don't really have a say. I'm not really feeling fulfilled creatively at all.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, I'll do this project because it's the lead. So I actually have a say in things.
Yeah.
Not a say in things, but like, you know, a voice.
You do. And you have sway. And you,
yeah. And Rob was like down for anything. And I was like, let's go in 110% and just see what happens. And I really got to explore a lot of the process stuff that I loved in theater. That was actually the first time I really got to explore to the same level I would on stage.
Wow. I guess, I mean, I had this question, but it kind of links. So you said that you didn't really enjoy your TV experience as much as maybe some other set experiences.
Mm.
How do you feel now? Do you prefer doing TV or movies? Do you feel that there's a major difference in your experience there?
There is, but however, the movies I've done haven't been big budget. They've been indie films, so we are shooting quite quickly. Because I would think higher budget films, there's a little bit more time.
Yeah.
The films that I've done are still quick because we don't have as much of a budget.
Yeah.
So the speed is the same for television and the films I've experienced.
Mm-hmm.
However, TV is a writer's medium. And the directors come in, you know, we have a different director every episode.
Yeah.
And depending on the director, sometimes, I mean, the machine's already oiled. It's already working. So the director kind of, you know, calls action. But a lot of times, I don't even think the director gets much say.
Because they're there for one episode.
Yeah, and they've already, they tell the director how it's supposed to look. They have a very specific tone.
Yeah.
So in TV, we kind of go in, there's just not as much collaboration, really.
Yeah.
You kind of go and you say your lines, do your thing. With film, even though the ones that I've been in have been quicker, I still have always had the experience where I can talk to the director and the director has the authority and a level of care.
Because they're overseeing the entire project.
Yeah,
right?
And it's usually their baby. Usually the director has also written it or co-written it.
Yeah.
Indie's
so fun.
Yeah. But I really appreciate that conversation ahead of time because I'm very much about process and the world building beforehand.
Yeah.
I really love sitting down for coffee with the director and, and hashing things out.
Well, that's, I mean, not to mention my thesis project again,
but please, I love
writing. I'm a writer, but I also am an actor and I understand I love improvisation. I know that like whatever comes out of their mouths, they could say it much better than I could write it because they're their own person. And so in casting, I cast my 2 leads after like the 5th draft of my script and they've been involved since then. We're on to like draft 12 or whatever.
Cool.
And I really am prioritizing making sure that the other 2 actors that I do cast feel that they can have a say and be involved. And I really think
well, I know it will elevate my project, giving them the freedom to say, hey, can I say this instead? Or, hey, let's take this conversation this way, while obviously staying true to the story. But I just, actors having input, like, I think is a huge benefit.
Yeah.
Or being able to be comfortable in what they're saying and doing.
Yeah.
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 I always prefer the sets that are more of a collaboration. Mm-hmm. And you can tell the people that have come from a theater background, right? And they kind of get rid of the hierarchy.
Yeah.
The hierarchy destroys creativity.
Yeah.
It really does.
Because then how are you going to feel comfortable having an input?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We were going to ask you the question, like, what makes a good actor's director?
Oh.
But it sounds like collaboration.
Yeah, collaboration and care.
Mm.
I feel like there's a lot of, not just with directors, I feel like everyone in this industry, there comes to a point, myself, I've hit it too, where there's a level of, I don't know, hopelessness or bitterness, whatever the thing that drives it, you start losing care.
Yeah.
And you kind of just start going through the motions a little bit.
Yeah.
So when you come across people who really care and are still have that spark alive, it reinvigorates you.
The spark, yeah.
You know what I mean? Those are the people that I want to work with.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you think, is there anyone... I feel like you've had such a really rich catalog. That's why I keep asking you to name things. If you can't think of something off the top of your head, that's totally fine. But is there a director that comes to mind that you've worked with that you really enjoyed?
Oh, a lot. I don't want to single one out because I don't want to leave anyone out. But I'll say Jordan Wanch for Shadow of the Rougrou. Mm. Like, the level of which he cares,
yeah,
I've never seen before. Not only with the story and you know, everyone on set, but also with the intentionality of how he does things, how he approaches the stories, yeah, how he brings in the opinions of elders and community in. He really set a standard, I think, moving forwards for how directors should approach.
Yeah.
Especially those types of stories.
Yeah.
You know?
Sincere care.
Yeah. Sincere care. He really cares a lot.
Yeah.
I would work with him in a heartbeat.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I have a sneaking suspicion you're going to be a director like that.
Oh, thank you. I care.
Yeah, 100%.
Thank you. I care very much. I don't know if directing it will be my journey, but it's been fun. I like directing, so
yeah,
we'll see. I like producing and acting.
Also, DTF, level of care on that set was incredible as well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. We tried. We really tried. We wanted, I think our main priority for that was that the people on set felt good and that they wanted to be there and that we had good, kind people over people that had lots of experience, but maybe, yeah, I don't know.
Even from that first meeting on Zoom, like, I was blown away by, the whole workbook.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't remember the name. What was the name of it?
I don't remember.
But it was just like, how are we going to approach each other with respect? How
that's something I do as a producer or a director every time. Like, the first meeting we have is, how do you like to be spoken to? How do you take feedback?
I love that. Do you have hours of,
which is interesting because I feel like I've had conversations with producers who have been in the industry for a long time, and they've kind of talked down to the fact that Gen Z or whoever, like the younger generation, is being a little bit more, like, we don't work after 10 p.m. or we don't, you know what I mean? Having those conversations, but.
If being young means being cognizant of wellness, like, if that's upsetting to anyone, I'll take it. Like,
right, exactly.
But yeah, no, I really love that. It's my favorite thing about some of the projects that I do when we're able to be like, hey, I'm feeling really this today. Can we just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I hadn't seen that before, I don't think.
Wow.
Like, from the first meeting like that, yeah, with everybody, it was really, really beautiful.
Yeah. But just setting a standard of respect. And also, we take a deep breath together at the end of our meetings, which was fun.
Sometimes needed. For listeners who may not know, DTF was the Crazy Eights short that Hannah produced randomly. Yeah. I was an extra in. Thank you,
yes,
Hannah.
Yes, yes. And also, Cody executive produced.
And Cody executive
no,
produced.
I didn't executive produce.
Yes, you
I was
did.
You were production coordinator.
Oh,
no, co-producer.
But, okay,
that's what
co-producer.
I was.
Hey, your IMDb says executive producer.
Does
so,
it really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Wait, I
no,
don't know.
It must God. Say, I think a co-producer.
Okay, well, my bad.
I'll take an executive producer. I just roamed around and rated crafty.
It was great.
Distracted people, really. It was a lot of fun.
No,
it was
good.
I wanted to ask how you initially like got involved with the Crazy Eights productions, because DTF wasn't the only
no there were six
project you were involved with, right?
Yeah, so my friend Naomi King was a wonderful artist, tattoo artist, actor, musician,
awesome,
novelist, all the things,
creative.
They were
pitching a short film for it that I was attached as a producer. And we made it to top 40, I think. So I went in the in-person pitches with them. And then we didn't get in, but Grace messaged me. You guys had Grace on
we
the
had
show,
Grace
right?
on, yeah. Yes.
I saw that. Grace is wonderful. So Grace, or no, it wasn't Grace. It was Nick.
Okay.
Nick Altobelli. She messaged
me.
Oh,
yes. Yes.
And was like, hey, we're looking for co-producers and production coordinators for this. And we know who you are and you have good recommendations. So we'd love to bring you in for an interview. So I interviewed with her and Grace and they picked me.
Awesome.
And so I did it for 2 years where I was able to help oversee like all six. I was really assigned three, but I would lend my efforts to all six. Mm-hmm. And just kind of help as a producing mentor if people needed that, or helping connect people if they needed that, or just really doing paperwork on the Crazy Eight side of things.
Yeah.
Just kind of a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Were you ever tempted? Was there ever any like temptation to, because you're also teaching and coaching acting, like was there ever any temptation to like give feedback while that was happening, or you just like, you know what your role is on the set and you kind of stuck with that?
Yeah, no temptation. I find since I opened the theater company, since I started kind of producing work, other people's work, I really just like helping build the platform for other creatives. And I find when I'm doing that, I really don't have an urge to lend my voice. I'm really just excited about getting their voice heard.
Yeah.
So in lending in any efforts that I can to just make that happen, that's what I'm excited about. So I don't think there's any temptation about that. Unless someone asks me and then I kind of have to switch the hat, be like, okay, well, let me think about, I guess
Left
I have
brain,
an opinion.
Right brain. Yeah.
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 But I think I do am pretty, what's the word?
I don't know.
Multidisciplinary?
No, like I can,
consistent?
I can categorize.
Compartmentalize.
Thank you.
Yes,
I can compartmentalize well when it comes to the creative hats. The producer hat is different than the director and the
actor. I find it really hard to take my producer hat off as a director or as a, I just find it hard to take. That's what I'm learning right now.
I feel, even when I'm writing, I feel like it's really difficult for me to write without thinking about production side of things.
Yeah.
Which is sometimes difficult too when I'm just like, how ambitious do I want to be? Because then the producer part of me is like, okay, well, more locations means more budget means
this is true. This is true.
I try to separate it though, but that's, I think we wanted to ask you too, just touching on like, because you do wear so many hats.
Great segue. I was going to ask that question.
Yeah, like you're able to kind of juggle all these different responsibilities, you know, at different periods in time. But just in terms of how you see yourself as a creative individual or like within the film industry, do you feel like you identify most strongly with one of the positions, or now that you're kind of venturing into other areas? Like,
I mean, acting is my number one.
Your first love.
It is my first love. I love acting. And with that, I've now discovered teaching as another part of that love.
Yeah.
Because it's still, you know, and sometimes teaching, I actually get more fulfilled because we're really diving in and doing all these, you know, really cool process techniques and exercises that I don't often get time for with auditions and acting.
Yeah.
But really diving into character, process, story, all those, that's my first love. So acting, teaching, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. And then I think secondary, directing. I love directing.
Yeah.
I really do. And then I also, I like writing, but I like collaborating on writing. I don't really like sitting there by myself. I like being in the, you know what I mean?
I need someone to read it out loud for me to be like, oh, that sounds weird. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So I like being in a, like I'm helping develop this show right now with a couple co-writers, and I love that experience. Being in the writer's room.
Yeah.
So I think I want to direct mostly, but I want to have a say in the writing. I just don't want to take on the writing solo.
I feel that.
Yeah. And then producing probably would come in last. I think I'll always want to be some sort of a creative producer.
Yeah.
But I think right now I've just been so burnt out that I don't want to solely produce.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot. Yeah. And I think to that sentiment, listeners, I think it's important as a creative not to put yourself in like a box of I'm just a writer, or I'm just an actor, or I'm just a producer. I mean, of course, if that's what you're called to, but I think as a creative, you kind of don't have a choice but to be involved in all of the different elements. And I think it's okay that at certain points in time, you might be leaning more into one than the other.
I'd be out of work for years if I didn't go start making my own work.
Right? Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask too, just like, has it kind of flowed sequentially, or have you had to prioritize acting projects over producing projects? Or
no, I don't, like, in the last 6 years, I've booked one audition. Like, sorry, I booked one union project, which was a small role in this show called Guilty Party in Calgary in 2021. Before that, I booked Daybreak in 2018. Mm-hmm. Other than that, all the projects I've done have been, like, short films, indie films, things I've, like, sought out on my own.
Yeah.
Or helped produce in a way. Or, you know, so all in the last 6 years, really the work that I've been doing has been writing and directing and producing and trying to find my own work.
Yeah.
Because acting hasn't been there.
Yeah.
So if I was just solely an actor, if I just was solely an actor and really holding on to that, it's been a hard 6 years, but it would have been extra hard if I had nothing creative to fulfill me.
Yeah. I think, I mean, I see a lot of actors really hone in on acting and focus, and that's beautiful. But I, like I just said, I think having other things as well allows you to keep that spark for acting alive and still love it and still want to do it. Because if everything that you're doing is riding on that one thing, it becomes anxiety inducing and exhausting.
Yeah.
In that, how have you found your community? Like, where do you find, and that's a big question, how have you found your community?
My community, I don't know. You know, I've always felt a little bit kind of like a lone wolf. I kind of, even ever since I was like in school, I kind of always bounce around between different groups of people. I was talking to a friend about this the other day. Like, I always, she always has this group of people. They're always at every event together, always going out. And I'm a little bit jealous when I see that, to be honest. Like, I'm so happy that when I see it, but there's a part of me that's a little bit jealous because I don't know if I've ever really found that.
Yeah.
I have some incredibly deep, meaningful relationships in my life. But I don't know. I've always kind of just bounced around. I haven't really had that sense of community in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense.
And it's interesting.
I relate to you on that.
Do you?
Yeah, I do.
I would say I also relate.
I mean, like, I have my individual friendships that are super deep and rich, and I am so grateful for them, and long-term friendships. But yeah, having that one group that you see all the time that you're going out with, I don't know.
Yeah,
I
think I like the way it is.
Me
like,
too.
I don't know, you know what I mean?
I'm a one-on-one person.
Yeah, but there's still a part of you sometimes where you're like, oh, that looks fun. I want to be invited.
But then when I'm there, I'm kind of like talking to the one person anyway.
Yeah, exactly, yes, exactly. Or just petting the dog.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, going home early, that's me.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like too, especially with film or just, you know, being involved in these different projects, like, to some extent, like, you know, when you're... I feel like we're always talking about how network has like a dirty association with it.
Like networking?
Networking, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, to some extent, you're developing a network of people because you as an individual are going on these projects and, you know, only you have worked on this project and this project and this project. So then when it comes time that you're creating your own film or what have you and you're deciding who to call, you get to pull from all these...
Yeah.
You kind of get to pull a little bit from all the groups. And
create your own community.
And create your own community.
Period.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. This is Hannah from the future. Pardon the sudden change in audio quality. I just want to say thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you want to hear the rest of our interview with Cody, you can find that on our Spotify. It'll be out next Tuesday. You can find us at Film Picnic on Spotify. You can find us on Instagram at FLM Picnic, and you can find recordings of each episode on the CITR Radio website. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week on Film Picnic as we debunk the film industry with meaningful conversation, one picnic at a time. Coming up next on CITR is Discali.